Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 512, titled Alvin of Arabia. This is being recorded on May 29th of the year 2005. The title of the broadcast refers to Alvin Malnick, an associate of and someone dubbed as the heir to Meyer Lansky, the man credited with forging the syndicate in American organized crime. Alvin Malnick ultimately not only converted to Islam and adopted an Arabic name, but his son, Mark Malnick, married a member of the Saudi royal family, a Saudi princess. He changed his name to Sharif, converted to Islam as well. So now the heir to Meyer Lansky and his heir apparent, or at least his son, his legal heir, are now not only Muslims, but have changed their names to Arabic names and are deeply involved with the Saudi royal family. We're going to be examining this, and this in turn is going to serve as something of a gateway to a discussion of the relationship between elements of organized crime and Saudi Arabia. And underlying that, and not underlying it by a great deal at all, is one of the complicating aspects of the investigation into September 11th. The milieu of September 11th, the milieu of the hijackers who were involved with the activities of September 11th, runs through some of the protected drug networks that have been involved with our intelligence system or elements of our intelligence system for many, many, many years. In turn, obviously, as the Iran-Contra scandal illustrated in dramatic fashion, those controlled drug networks are part of what has evolved as the American covert operations establishment over the years. And in turn, there's evidence suggesting that some of those networks may very well have been used by elements both inside and outside of the U.S. intelligence apparatus that are anything but loyal to the United States. Some of these protected/controlled drug networks appear to have been the vehicle for secreting the bomb that blew up Pan Am 103 onto that aircraft when there was a baggage switch in Frankfurt, Germany, when before the flight left for Scotland. And in turn, as we have seen in our discussions with Daniel Hopsicker in connection with his book Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and many of the 9/11 figures in Florida utilized some of these controlled drug networks, which were linked to some of these bogus flight schools in South Florida and elsewhere. And those controlled drug networks became the vehicle for the infiltration. And in turn, I think as we contemplate not only September 11th, but a great many other aspects of American political life, I think that one of the things that needs to be understood is that some of these criminal networks are so deeply embedded into the fabric of American life that it is, to a certain extent, beyond the control even of the government itself or elements thereof to root some of this corruption out, because there are other elements of the government that are deeply involved with this corruption. My own feeling is that the epicenter of September 11th was not the United States, but there are very powerful elements within the United States that were deeply complicit, a fifth column, if you will, with the activities of September 11th. And one of the things that is going to be extremely difficult, if not impossible, for this country to correct are some of these organized crime networks, because they are transnational. A great many powerful figures could be compromised if the truth were to come out about some of these networks. And beyond that, the economic clout wielded not only by some of these networks but related elements, the Saudis in particular, and other elements of the Middle Eastern oil kingdoms, they have so much economic clout that their political influence within the United States, due to some of the corporate connections stemming from that clout, are proving altogether refractory to not only serious reform, but frankly to even reasonable journalistic and legal investigation. So against the background of the strange tale of Alvin of Arabia stands, I think, the very question of whether the United States is going to be able to survive in the future. And I am frankly very pessimistic in that regard and very frightened. But we're going to be taking a look at an aspect of not only American society, but again, of the landscape surrounding September 11th that I have not spent as much time on as I should. Frankly, my broadcasts have not covered organized crime to the extent that perhaps they should have. Organized crime per se is not something I find particularly interesting. That's simply my own taste. But frankly, it is a very important aspect of American life and international power political life. And so by way of giving credit where credit is due, and also by way of shedding light on a very, very important political dynamic, we're going to be taking a look at some of those organized crime syndicates and how they merge with elements that are generally not assumed to be associated with them. I think the very last thing in the world anybody would have thought of, including yours truly, was that the heir to the Lansky syndicate would convert to Islam, change his name to an Arabic name, have his son marry into the Saudi royal family, and become, in effect, Alvin of Arabia. But that's what happened, and here is that story and also the story of related dynamics. We're going to be relying for much of our information in this broadcast on the book Barry and the Boys, subtitled The CIA, The Mob, and America's Secret History. That book was authored by the heroic Daniel Hopsicker, and this is the prequel, so to speak, to his Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 cover-up in Florida. By the way, parenthetically and in passing, I want to note that all references in the LexisNexis database to the articles that document the fundamental contradictions between the official version of the story of Mohammed Atta in Florida and the actual story as it has been pieced together largely by Daniel Hopsicker and other investigators, the LexisNexis database is being cleansed, purged, bowdlerized of those articles. Daniel Hopsicker at his madcowprod.com has an article about the purging of the journalistic record of Mohammed Atta in Florida. But it is Daniel Hopsicker's work upon which we're going to be relying in considerable measure in this broadcast, so let's go. From Barry and the Boys, The CIA, The Mob, and America's Secret History by Daniel Hopsicker, we're going to be accessing Chapter 30, Alvin of Arabia. It's Bugsy Siegel who's credited with first envisioning Las Vegas as a gambling mecca, but Meyer Lansky was the money behind the dream. Bespectacled and known for operating quietly behind the scenes, Lansky took on legendary status in underworld lore, earning a place in books and movies and even a citation in the Encyclopedia Britannica. Described in newspaper headlines as chairman of the board and financial wizard of the underworld, Lansky opened gambling operations in South Florida after World War II, controlling casinos from Cuba to Vegas. He was even in The Godfather. Remember Hyman Roth, unquote? Richard Benveniste's close associate Alvin Malnick was Meyer Lansky's attorney. By the way, I'm going to interject here. We're going to resume with the discussion of Benveniste. Richard Benveniste is a Democratic Party power broker. He was the attorney for the late Barry Seal, the drug smuggler and CIA officer about whom this book, Barry and the Boys, revolves. And the aforementioned Richard Benveniste is also a partner in a German-based international law firm that is involved with many of the lawsuits stemming from September 11th. Richard Benveniste was also on the 9/11 Commission and is alleged by many to have been one of the Democratic ringers in that particular commission. There were plenty of Republican ringers as well. But that's who Richard Benveniste is, and he was a very close associate of Alvin Malnick. Beginning again, Richard Benveniste's close associate, unquote, Alvin Malnick, was Meyer Lansky's attorney. When Lansky died in 1983 at age 81, Reader's Digest named Malnick his heir apparent, unquote, and the moniker stuck. Malnick has by now been called Meyer Lansky's heir apparent so often in print that it must feel like part of his job title. Quote, "It was a known fact among the criminal underworld that dealing with Al Malnick was the same as dealing with Meyer Lansky," unquote, said Vincent Teresa, convicted criminal and government witness to investigators for the New Jersey Gambling Commission. Alvin Malnick's circle of acquaintances is perfectly illustrated in his role as director of the Bank of World Commerce, a Bahamas-based institution involving, quote, "some of the nation's top gangsters," unquote, the New Jersey report said, again quoting, Millions of dollars passed through the door and was reinvested in syndicate-controlled projects in the United States, unquote. But gangsters weren't all the bank was about. The Bank of World Commerce was the brainchild of CIA agent Colonel Paul Helliwell. Mob money flowed into its secret numbered accounts by the hundreds of millions, Lansky money most of it, and then out again to the International Credit Bank of Switzerland before returning to the U.S. for reinvestment. Paul Helliwell, the CIA's paymaster at the Bay of Pigs, unquote, was also, we were soon to learn, the true owner of Barry Seal's Learjet. By the way, as we looked at in our discussions with Daniel Hopsicker for the records 482, 83, and 84 about Welcome to Terrorland, some of the heirs to many of the Iran-Contra-connected drug smuggling networks, including those run by Barry Seal, figure in the milieu of the controlled drug networks which were linked to these bogus flight schools and airlines through which Mohammed Atta and his German, Swiss, and Austrian associates infiltrated into the United States, as well as some of the Arabic participants in the conspiracy as well. I should say Arab participants, not Arabic participants as well. So, again, when there's the reference here to Barry Seal's Learjet, some of the heirs to Barry Seal's operations were involved with the milieu through which Mohammed Atta and some of the 9/11 hijackers infiltrated. Resuming with our narrative. Alvin Malnick had in the early 1970s invested in the Cricket Club, a Miami high-rise with 220 condominiums and a frequent hangout of Barry Seal's while he was in Miami. But he also, Seal, that is, often ate at the Malnick-owned Forge restaurant. The club's developer, no doubt by coincidence, had been convicted with Teamster Jimmy Hoffa on fraud and conspiracy charges in 1964. Blackie had told us one of the Seal organization's investors, unquote, was the Central State Teamsters Pension Fund. But then many of the Teamsters Fund's borrowers were associates of organized crime. $5.4 million, for example, was loaned to Alvin Malnick. Malnick had connections to George Bush as well. By the way, that's George Bush the Elder. According to the book Blue Thunder, Bush even bought from Malnick associate Don Aronow one of his signature cigarette boats, the top choice of offshore smugglers. After Don Aronow was murdered, published accounts stated he had been a drug smuggler and money launderer linked to the Genovese Purple Gang of New York City within the framework of the Meyer-Lansky Organized Crime Syndicate. Aronow numbered among his friends public figures and celebrities like the head of the Smugglers Airline, unquote, Eastern Airlines chairman Frank Borman, savings and loan scandal poster boy Charles Keating, and Alvin Malnick, all exalted acquaintances suggestive of intelligence connections as well. Because Seal's lawyer Richard Benvenisti was such a close associate of Alvin Malnick's, we wanted to get an idea of what he'd been up to the past several decades. And we didn't have to look very far in newspaper archives to find evidence of his enormous influence. Quote, "The club's location inside the venerable Forge restaurant was meant to recall old Cuba," unquote, "and in that it succeeded beyond anyone's wildest dreams," said a Miami New Times profile of September 16, 1999. After all, the Forge is owned by Alvin Malnick, a man considered by federal law enforcement officials to be a major organized crime figure, and, as former Miami Police Chief Rocky Pomerantz put it, Meyer-Lansky's fair-haired boy, unquote. Richard Benveniste's chum, Al Malnick, we discovered, is so powerful that he found a way to legalize loan sharking. He is, quote, "Mr. Payday Loan," unquote. According to the Nashville Tennessean of April 18, 1999, quote, "The shadow of organized crime has descended on Tennessee's political landscape via campaign contributions from the operator of a string of Georgia-based auto title, unquote, loan companies, the Tennessean has learned, unquote. The owners of Tennessee companies that own that, beginning again, quote, "The owners of Tennessee companies that loan money at almost 800% annual interest are kept secret from the public under the controversial payday loan," unquote, law passed here earlier this year. In Florida, federal investigators have found organized crime figures infected one such Miami-area business, threatening to harm borrowers if they did not repay loans and interest, unquote. The shadow of organized crime, unquote, referred to as Alvin Malnick. And making money off the poor, as anyone who's watched The Sopranos knows, is what mobsters do. Quote, according to a federal court indictment, members of the New York-based Gambino crime family found such an opportunity in Deerfield Beach, Florida, at Easy Check Cashing, a storefront business that extended large short-term loans similar to those made by payday loan companies in Tennessee, unquote, the Tennessean article said. Again quoting, the last thing needed by consumers who have exhausted all avenues to credit is to turn to businesses that offer loans at triple-digit interest, bankruptcy officials said. These are predators, stated one official, unquote. Nine men, including John Gotti's successor, were charged with extortion for their easy loans, as well as conspiracy to kidnap, murder, and commit arson. Quote, neither the public nor Tennessee law enforcement authorities have the right to learn who operates similar cash advance companies here, the article concluded. By law, those records are kept secret at the State Department of Financial Institutions. Quote, I'm just shocked, unquote, said State Senator Roscoe Dixon, Democrat of Memphis. Senator Roscoe's being shocked reminds us of the bit in the movie Casablanca where Lieutenant Renault pockets his roulette winnings while simultaneously telling Bogey's Rick that he's shocked, shocked that gambling is taking place on the premises. Next is a discussion of Alvin Malnick's wedding to a model, 36 years his junior. And one of the things that's worth noting are some of the show business celebrities and some of the political figures who were present at the marriage, at the wedding of Alvin Malnick. Among the people present were not only the aforementioned Richard Benveniste, but also F. Lee Bailey, one of the attorneys who... Well, F. Lee Bailey is a very famous figure. He has since been disbarred, and F. Lee Bailey was viewed by many as one of the ringers on O.J. Simpson's defense team. The reality of the O.J. Simpson case also had a lot to do with organized crime and various forms of organized vice, including prostitution and drug smuggling, as we've dealt with in our long discussions with various authors about the O.J. Simpson case. Those shows are available in the download-only archives for the record that are being maintained by WFMU. I'll tell you more about those at the end of the broadcast. Among the other people present at the wedding of Alvin Malnick, none other than the Nazinator, Arnold Schwarzenegger, a number of showbiz personalities, including Deborah Winger, and also a fellow named Paul Pope. Now, Paul Pope was the son of Generoso Pope, who owned and founded the National Enquirer, and what is not mentioned here, but one thing I want to stress, is that Generoso Pope, the founder of the National Enquirer, was a former CIA psychological warfare officer. I have heard it alleged by very knowledgeable sources that, in fact, the Central Intelligence Agency is deeply involved with the National Enquirer and other publications. They serve as very good vehicles for tarring those whom they want to tar, and because the National Enquirer has a lot of money and some of the best tort lawyers around, they are able to weather the legal storms that come with slaying people's reputations. Even when they occasionally lose a lawsuit, it takes so much time and so much money that it effectively neutralizes the plaintiff, even if the plaintiff ultimately wins. Now, again, I cannot prove that. Those are allegations, but the allegations come from a very, very reliable source. So again, note that Paul Pope, the son of former CIA psychological warfare officer Generoso Pope, who was definitely the owner and founder of the National Enquirer, he was yet another of the people present at the wedding of Alvin Malnick, Alvin of Arabia, for whom this program is named. Returning to Barry and the Boys by Daniel Hopsicker, we read, several years ago, at the ripe old age of 61, Malnick found it necessary to marry a young model 36 years his junior. Theirs became one of the lavish weddings that society columnists like the Miami Herald's Joan Fleischman love to gush about. Quote, wedding bells for Alvin Malnick, attorney, millionaire, restaurateur, long-divorced world traveler, wine connoisseur, car collector, fancier of Arabian horses, parenthetically apparently more than just horses, survivor of assorted federal mob investigations, a guy who really knows his way around. Malnick, 61, will marry Nancy Gresham, 25, a one-time model from Atlanta, in a lavish black tie bash Saturday night at the private Malnick compound at Boca Raton, she wrote. The nuptials took place at the Malnick family ranch, unquote, in Boca Raton, which was, Ms. Fleischman noted gleefully, more Hefner mansion than Little House on the Prairie, unquote. The 288 guests had cocktails, nibbled on salmon and beluga, and, quote, compared wedding notes in the sprawling patio area, which featured a meandering swimming pool, grill center, and kitchen, plus cute little fully stocked townhouses for overnight guests, unquote. The guest list reads like a who's who of a certain stratum of American life. Among the invitees were, but of course, Richard Benveniste, as well as F. Lee Bailey, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Deborah Winger, designer Nicole Miller, Manhattan real estate mogul Hank Sofer, L.A. restaurateur Nikki Blair, gangsta rap Natch, record producer Russell Simmons, Rebecca Gayhart, co-host of a Steven Spielberg TV show, Carol Connors, who wrote Gonna Fly Now, the theme from Rocky, Darian Iacocca, wife number three of former Chrysler chairman Lee Iacocca, Paul Pope, whose dad, the late Generoso Pope, owned the National Enquirer, and mob, quote, associate, unquote, and casino czar Clifford Perlman. The list, as they say, goes on. Worth noting was actor Gianni Russo, who, in a bit of unintended irony, which the Miami Herald reported straight-faced, had played Al Pacino's bookie brother-in-law, Carlo Rizzi, in The Godfather, skipping down. Alvin the groom presented his bride with that ultimate wedding gift of choice, we learned, the 50-carat emerald and diamond necklace. Then we were surprised to read that there'd been a table at Malnick's nuptials reserved for Saudi Arabian sheiks, that St. Louis-born Alvin, who's Jewish, had a son who had changed his name to Sharif and married a woman from the Saudi royal family, not previously known, by us at least, as being cozy with Jewish mobsters. Quote, they met 2 years ago at a party and fell in love, unquote, said Sharif Malnick, the groom's son and best man. She's very beautiful, unquote. The story, as we pieced it together, was incredible. Incredible, but true. By the way, that refers to, obviously, the Nancy Gresham. Sharif Malnick, nay, Mark Malnick, is the Muslim Saudi royal family in-law who is the son of Alvin Malnick. And now returning to the story of how Mark Malnick became Sharif Malnick and how Alvin Malnick became Alvin of Arabia. The story, as we pieced it together, was incredible. Incredible, but true. Malnick had befriended a Saudi family in the early 1980s, the Al-Fassi Tarek family from Saudi Arabia, various newspaper accounts reported. This set off a dim memory for us, since this family, the Al-Fassis, had scandalized blasé Beverly Hills while we lived nearby. After arriving with an entourage of bodyguards, cooks, and other servants, the family had purchased a highly visible $2.4 million estate right on Sunset Boulevard in Beverly Hills. They then began renovating, unquote, placing anatomically correct flesh-colored Roman statues on the walls, complete with painted-on black pubic hair. Gawkers were lining up all day. The house quickly became the talk of the town. Some in the clannish enclave were clearly not amused. The mansion was, in short order, burned down by arsonists. For those of us living in L.A. at the time, as far as we knew, that had been the end of the Saudi scandal. But there was, we now learned with mounting excitement, much more to the story. When the Al-Fassis left L.A., they had continued roaming the world, spending spectacular sums of brother-in-law Saudi royal Prince Turki's money on lavish parties, chartered jets, hotel suites by the floor, automobiles by the fleet, clothing by the rack, and jewelry by the tray. They had soon joined the prince in Europe, where they became involved with the increasingly ubiquitous Alvin Malnick, settling down for 6 months at the Intercontinental Hotel in Geneva, where the prince distributed bundles of cash to his insatiable entourage. We're going to continue this story in side two of the program. By the way, I want to note that this Prince Turki, as far as I know, is not the Prince Turki who for many years was the Saudi chief of intelligence and the man who ran Osama bin Laden, certainly during the Afghan war against the Soviets, and evidence suggests for a long period of time after that, well into the planning of for September 11th. Prince Turki, by the way, the Saudi intelligence chief, Turki resigned, his position as chief of Saudi intelligence after well over two decades, a week before September 11th. This, I believe, however, is a different Prince Turki. Anyway, we're going to go into that. We're going to resume the story of Alvin of Arabia in Side 2 of the program. Note, first of all, that sister station WFMU in Jersey City, New Jersey, is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio and now on MP3 as well. More recent programs are available streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word, DaveEmory. Older programs are available for download only at a longer URL linked to both that address and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website as well. By the way, at the beginning of every program description for the Record broadcast, there are links to both of the WFMU websites, both the streaming website and the download-only website. When I made a reference to the many programs I did about the O.J. Simpson case, those programs are all available for download from the download site. Now, Spitfire is the CD duplication service that distributes all of the programs and lectures I've done over the years. They have a remarkable website as well. Please visit that at www.spitfirelist.com. Spitfire List is one word, SPITFIRELIST.com, and there is a wealth of information there available as well. The For the Record shows are turned into long article-length written descriptions, so if one of the programs is not altogether intelligible to you, please go to the Spitfire website and read the description, because you can take as much time as you want. I'm currently quite a ways behind. I'm about a month behind in getting the written descriptions up. I will be catching up, but I want to ask veteran listeners forgiveness that, stuff got in the way. Expletive deleted happens, and it did here. So I'm about a month behind on getting the descriptions up, but I will get caught up. And again, please note that every For the Record show is turned into a long, annotated, article-length description with the text from the various sources that I access. So again, if a show is not altogether comprehensible to a listener, and I can appreciate how that might not be, that might be the case, get the description and read it. Plus, you can email around the descriptions. Also on the Spitfire website are the last several For the Record programs. They're available for download on both Real Audio and MP3. There are descriptions of all of the other programs and lectures that I've done. They are not, unlike the more recent For the Record shows, annotated and featuring text, but they're available nonetheless. There also is a link to a website maintained by listeners in the Midwest that features the declassified U.S. government documents about the Bush family's investment with Nazi industry before, during, and after World War II. There also are both Adobe PDF and HTML versions of the landmark text Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, the suppressed but vitally important book that is essential for the understanding of the For the Record programs and the analysis being presented in them. The book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile was written by the late heroic Paul Manning, and that suppressed book, that vitally important book, that consummately important book, is available for download for free on both Adobe PDF and HTML on the Spitfire website. By the way, WFMU is now podcasting the For the Record shows, so if you have an iPod and if you would like to have the For the Record broadcasts transmitted directly to that, there is a link at the beginning of the For the Record descriptions that you can click on in order to have that done. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 512, Alvin of Arabia, being recorded on May 29th, 2005. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.